Welcome to Lady Killers, a podcast about female serial killers. I am your host, Abraham Archambeau. Let's go dig up some bodies. In the podcast world, this cold weather is moving in around the country, which is expected because winter is coming, and it's coming in a hurry. The holidays are just around the corner, and if you're looking for any last minute gift ideas, maybe you can go check out my screenplay Loon Lake on Amazon. It is now available at a low holiday price. You can head on over to Amazon, check it out if you want to read this scary thriller before the film comes out next year. Maybe you know somebody that would be interested in getting this. If they like horror, it's a great stocking stuffer for them. So consider it. Head on over to Amazon and check that out. But enough of all this promotion. Let us start the show for this week. And for those of you out there that are new to the podcast, Lady Killers is a weekly podcast where we discuss female serial killers. Each week, a new lady killer will be chosen. And each one that we do choose here represents a different state in our union. And by the end of the first season or second season, I haven't decided the format of that yet, if it's going to be broken up into one or two seasons. But at the end of it all, we will make our way through the entire United States, all 50 states. And I will probably throw in Puerto Rico if I can find somebody from there. And, after that, we'll probably dive into female serial killers that are from other countries. I mean, let me tell you something. You think American serial killers are bad? Wow. Just you wait until we venture out of the United States. And since we're talking about lady killers and serial killers, I will warn everyone right now who's listening, you are about to hear tales of murder and sex, and if you're sensitive to this type of material, you might want to consider listening to a different podcast, something on the lighter side. But if you're okay with it, let's get going. But alas, you have been warned. Up to this point, we've really only discussed the individual serial killers that have acted mostly on their own. Clementine Barnabet, that axe murderer from Louisiana, she may have had others helping her. But for the most part, on this podcast, we deal with individual murderers every week. We try to take a look at their upbringings, and usually something horrible happened in their past as they were children, possibly. Individually, they were targeted. But I mixed it up a little bit this week, and I have chosen a murdering duo. They are actually related, and they committed their atrocities together. They are representing the state of Illinois today. This week, our lady killers are the killing cousins, Caroline Peoples and Angel Ford Wright. Now, Chicago has been known in the past for its violence and for its high murder rate. Organized crime, it's the city where Al Capone and his gangsters terrorized the people of the city with all the mobster rackets, and there were frequent bombings around town that Al Capone was responsible for, him and his goons. In the 70s, you had John Wayne Gacy. He lured young men into his inner circle before torturing and murdering them, and eventually burying the victims in that infamous crawl space of his. There was also Leopold and Loeb, who committed the crime of the century in Chicago, famous in history. But this week, we take a look at some sinister women, and they killed merely to gain material possessions. They didn't have any other motives besides robbery. And that is a big change from our previous lady killers, who killed for sometimes just the act of killing and the feeling that it brought them. And so today is a little bit different, and we will talk about these cousins from Chicago, Caroline Peoples and Angel Ford Wright. And all this happened in 2004. During the Cousins' reign of terror, the murder rates were actually at a pretty low rate in Chicago compared to other years in that area. It was the first time in 40 years that the murder rate had fallen below 500 murders throughout the year. Nothing really is known about Caroline Peoples and Angel Ford Wright prior to their robbery and killing spree. And this killing spree began in early 2004, and it continued for close to 6 weeks. They were two African-American girls, both 26 years of age, who really just didn't want to get an honest job. Instead, they thought it would be better to just rob people and to get by and survive by just taking what they have stolen and try to make a life out of it instead of going to get a real job. Now, I'm not judging these women by all means. I mean, they came from the hardest streets in America, the South Side of Chicago. And I'm sure you've all heard about the South Side of Chicago in the news, in movies and TV. And I know we all do what we have to do to survive. But once you start murdering people, I feel that's a different story. And that is a story we're about to delve into here. Maybe there will be some tips in here that could save your own life. Who knows? And since I don't have any childhood information about these two cousins, we are going to start at the beginning of their crime and murder spree, which, again, as I said, it began in 2004 in late May. It all started on May 23rd when police found the body of a 38-year-old man by the name of Jose Marquez. He was found in his apartment, which was located at the 7600 block of South Phillips Avenue. I looked up crime stats for that address and that neighborhood and the zip code that they were from. And it is really, it's not something you want to write home about. On a scale of 1 to 100, that area has a violent crime rate every year of about 75. That's huge, especially when you compare that to the national average, which is only about 23. So that neighborhood, it was riddled with crime. So it was mostly robberies, but there was, like I say, 75 out of 100 for violent crimes is pretty high. The property crime rate was pretty similar as far as the numbers go, so it's not a good neighborhood to be stuck in if somehow you wind up there. So that's why it's hard to judge these people that are raised in this type of environment. Like I said, they do what they do to survive. But please, why do you have to go kill people? Just steal their stuff, leave them alone. So, you know, looking at this area of Chicago, finding Jose Marquez's body murdered, it didn't really throw up any sort of red flags at the time. It didn't really surprise many people because it's something that it was happening a lot in that area. And it turns out Jose Marquez, he was a disabled man, and he was actually under the nursing care of Angel Ford Wright at the time of his death. Now, Angel was definitely not an angel. Fallen Angel could be a better way to describe her. But she was a nursing student, and she was a nurse around the area at some time. She was also a security guard. So she had a couple honest jobs. It was just, I think, being around Caroline, her cousin, really sent her over the edge. And these two cousins, Caroline and Angel, they were short on cash, and they were struggling to survive. They were probably worried about where their next meal was going to come from, how they were going to pay rent. So they came up with a plan to get some money. They visited Jose at his apartment, and they became friendly with him as they were hanging out. They ended up both promising him sexual favors in exchange for money. Or in other terms, they were going to be sex workers to obtain this money. They needed to pay rent and bills and survive. Angel told Caroline that she was taking care of a disabled man, which was Jose Marquez, and she knew for sure he would say yes to the proposition of sexual favors in exchange for money, and so they began to plan their attack. The reason I think that she told Caroline that he would be easy to convince is he was already familiar with these two cousins. He had hung out with them before. Like I said, Angel was taking care of him, nursing him. So Caroline was probably hanging around the house a lot. And so they were all familiar with one another. So he didn't really think anything was out of the ordinary, probably, when Caroline and Angel told him all the things that they were going to do to him. These were all the things that he wanted to hear, you know, a disabled man possibly not getting as much action as he was wanting. And so he fell for their ruse. They promised various sexual favors if he would just hand over some cash. And, I mean, who knows how long it had been since Jose had been with a woman. You know, he was probably aching for a woman's touch. And I'm not talking in a clinical, antiseptic way either. He wanted a woman to touch him. In his naughty parts, if you will. And I bet he heard some things that they were wanting to do to him. And he just couldn't say no to the thought of these two women pleasuring him. And he had the dough. Why not? This first encounter, not a lot was written about it. It was pretty plain and simple, I think. The two were just pretending that they wanted Jose. They were seducing him. And they probably really played it up, and they really caught him off guard. Because he got real excited, and before they actually participated in any of the sexual acts that they had promised him, one of the cousins shot Jose in the back of the head. After rifling through all of Marquez's possessions, they came up with a small amount of money, and then they ran from the apartment. So what they had done is they used their friendship and their friendly smiles and a promise of God only knows what kind of sexual favors to lull Jose Marquez into some sort of horny frenzy, and then blasted him in the back of the head, and only to steal what was reportedly about $30. So this was the beginning of a murderous rampage that would plague the neighborhood for the next 6 weeks. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/ladykillers. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for all you listeners of this Lady Killers podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. In the past, I had read J.R.R. Tolkien's Hobbit, and previously I had listened to that on Audible, and it's still as amazing as it ever was. But this time I finally got around to listening to The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins, and it was better than I thought it would be, for sure. I mean, it kept me intrigued and on the edge of my car seat as I drove around town fighting this horrible Portland traffic. And I gotta say, it's a very exciting thriller, and I think listeners of this podcast would really love it. But as I mentioned, The Hobbit, if you're looking for something a little bit lighter, you can try that, the new unabridged version of The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien. But folks, it's entirely up to you and whatever floats your boat, man. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ladykillers. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ladykillers for your free audiobook. So less than 2 weeks later, the two murdering cousins paid a visit to Kenneth Reddick just before midnight on June 1st. And he lived at the 8200 block of South Commercial Avenue, another pretty hardcore, dangerous part of town. Kenneth was a 37-year-old man, and he was actually a previous lover of Angel Ford Wright. So he wasn't caught off guard when the two girls showed up at his apartment. And it was said that Angel and Kenneth had broken up, but they remained really good friends through everything. So it wouldn't have been that uncommon for her to drop by his house to hang out and chat. And so Caroline, without anybody else knowing, was packing heat in her jacket. And much like the case with Jose Marquez, the two began to promise some crazy wild night full of debauchery and wild sex between the three. So after they got down to the nitty-gritty, all three disrobed and they began to play around with each other, exploring each other's bodies. And then without any warning, While Angel was keeping Kenneth occupied, Caroline glided over to her jacket without anybody noticing and gently pulled the gun out. She nonchalantly flipped the safety lock off and she kind of just breezed up and calmly shot Kenneth Reddick in the head. His body would be found later, totally nude and just bloodied up. The two cousins made away with Kenneth's DVD player, his jacket, and a cell phone. Another senseless murder for items that couldn't have fetched more than $100. I mean, a DVD player, a jacket, and a cell phone, you're not getting much money out of that. I'm sure they were thinking they were going to get some cash out of the deal, some fast money, but they probably, you know, were pretty pissed off when all they came away with was the DVD player, jacket, and cell phone. So Angel actually returned later to Kenneth's residence to steal his Jeep. They actually didn't use that Jeep as a getaway after they had murdered Kenneth. So I assume Angel returned to steal the Jeep because she was going to sell it off or, you know, try to make some more money off his death, make it worthwhile for killing a human being instead of walking away with just a DVD player, cell phone, and a simple jacket, you know. So I assume she was probably planning on selling that Jeep later on. But regardless of why they stole that Jeep, the two cousins had now killed two innocent men. Two men that were just wanting to enjoy the company of a couple cute young cousins that had promised God knows what. But, you know, now we know these two young cousins, they would kill for any amount of money. It didn't matter. And between these two bodies, they couldn't have amassed more than a couple $100. I don't know how far that's going to get them, but that being said, they had to get back out on the streets and get back to trolling the neighborhood, try to find another horny dude out there to trick into giving money. A couple weeks later, on June 18th, the murdering cousins decided to cruise the area in their van, and it was quoted them saying, quote, looking for someone to rob, end quote. So they had planned it out all along. You know, they were looking for a guy to rob. Those words were spoken later on to police when they admitted and confessed to everything. So as they're cruising around, they spy this 24-year-old man outside of a store. His name's Kelvin Armstrong. And by all accounts, this wasn't somebody that they were familiar with. Like in the first two instances, the first two murders, those two were acquaintances of these cousins, and it made it a lot easier to trick them. You know, once you already have their trust, you can walk right through their front door and pretty much take whatever you want. In this case, Kelvin Armstrong, he was younger than them too, and he was the first stranger that they would be involved with. So they're cruising around, they spot Kelvin Armstrong. He's outside of a store, some sort of exchange store by the name of it. So I'm thinking he probably just came up with some money. It was probably a check cashing place, maybe. I don't know. But in any event, as he exits the store, he stuffs a real large wad of cash into his sock. And that was all that Caroline and Angel had to see. They cruised up on Kelvin and they propositioned him out the window. They promised him oral sex if he would hop in the van where they could discuss the payment arrangements, etc., etc. So, without hesitation, I mean, come on, these cute girls offering you oral sex, you know that you just stuffed a big wad of cash in your socks. You got the money to pay for it. Why not, man? Kelvin hopped into the van without hesitation. Why not hop in there? If that's what you're into, if that's what you're looking for, no harm, no foul, right? Wrong. So Calvin sat in the back of the van on the bench seat, and he was immediately caught off guard as he sat down because Caroline shoved a gun in his face. And after demanding all of his money, because she said, I saw you put that in your sock, so she demanded all the money of Calvin's sock. She took the money, and Caroline blasted him in the face with her gun anyway. They drove to a nearby bowling alley and they dumped Kelvin's bloodied body into the parking lot before screeching away with their new wad of cash. And after they counted it, it ended up being about $200. So there you have three murders, maybe averaging $100 a person. That's just something I can't even fathom, to kill somebody for $100. There's plenty of outlets out to go make that money, and I just think taking a life for $100, $200, it really, really shows the depravity of these women. At this point in the story, Caroline and Angel must have thought they were invincible. They had committed three murders, all point-blank gun blasts to the head or the face, and they were still out there, free women, roaming the streets of Chicago. But now they had a thirst for it. And they know they were pretty damn good at it, since there had been no hot fuzz around, nothing. They were getting away with these murders. So why not continue it if that's the case? On July 1st, Caroline and Angel again decided to cruise around in their van and look for another John that would be an easy target for the two. Again, they were going to plan on posing as prostitutes, and they were going to find some guy to promise sexual favors, and then they were probably just going to end up killing him. I'm not sure if the killing part was in their plan, but for sure they were going to target a man and promise sexual favors before taking his money. But in this case, for some reason or another, they decided to scrap that idea, and they paid a visit to old friend of Caroline's, 30-year-old Aisha Epps. They invited her to go out to eat with them at the local White Castle. Upon arriving at the burger joint, they sent Aisha in to buy their food. And they were just going to wait outside in the van while she was in there ordering and getting their food. And while she was inside ordering the food, the two murdering cousins discussed how they were going to off their friend Aisha. Aisha finally came back out to the van and delivered their food. Right after she sat down and got comfortable, out of nowhere she was met with a gun blast to the face. She crashed to the floor of the van, but she wasn't dead. She was still flailing around, sending blood flying everywhere, making these gurgling noises. You know, blood shooting out, gurgling out of her mouth, out of her face, still flailing around. So Angel calmly took the gun from Caroline's hand and just nonchalantly shot Aisha in the back of the head, execution style, similar to all the other victims. So after this, they cruised around town looking for a place to stash Aisha's body, and they ended up in a dark alley and dumped her body onto the hard ground. When she was found, her body was found with two bullet holes in her head and in her face. So the total net after this murder, we're looking at a small change purse and a set of keys. That's it. Can you imagine if that is all that your life is worth? A few coins and some keys to some unknown locks that you don't even know where those keys belong. I don't know. I don't know about you guys out there, but I feel like my life is worth more than a couple quarters and some keys that you don't even know where they go. So I think at this point they would have killed anybody for any reason. They were a danger. They were two girls that you needed to avoid. But at this point they had already developed a taste for murder. Now they were probably doing it just for the thrills, which is pretty evident in their score from the murder of Aisha Epps. I think they really truly thought they were invincible, that they would be able to carry on in this fashion forever. Unfortunately, the two cousins had made too much noise around town with the murder of Aisha Epps, and the police caught up with them just one day after dumping her body in that dark alleyway. They were both taken in without incident, and it really baffled police because, according to them, they both had relatively clean records. Now, when I say relatively, they had rap sheets, but according to police, there was nothing of, quote, significance, end quote, in their rap sheets. So it was probably some petty crime here and there. But there was surely nothing that would lead them to believe that these two girls could carry out something so horrific like this. So Caroline and Angel both videotaped themselves admitting to all four of the murders. They were charged with first-degree murder for all four of the murders. Caroline, the one I believe had the itchy trigger finger, she pled guilty immediately. She was ready to face the consequences for everything she had done. Now, as I said, both Caroline and Angel had videotaped their confessions, but when it came time to enter a plea, Angel had changed her tune and she said that she wanted a trial. So she demanded the trial, and she did end up getting a trial, which, you know, all it did is drag on, and all it did is cost more people money, all the taxpayers' money to draw out this trial, which I think everybody there knew how it was going to end. And so it did drag on for years, but Angel was still eventually found guilty, just like her cousin Caroline. They were both sentenced to life in prison for these ugly and atrocious deeds that they had committed. And so they are in for life, and they will rot away and die on the inside. And I just sit here trying to figure out why they did what they did. I mean, two cousins from the other side of the tracks, if you will, both with an insatiable desire to kill and rob helpless victims. And let's face it, that's what these people were. They were victims. Yes, I mean, the first three killings were men looking to sate their sexual fantasies with these two women. And the fourth victim, although a woman was killed, you know, she was killed trying to get a free meal, I think. You know, she wanted to hang out with Caroline and Angel and get a free meal at White Castle. Probably hungry and poor, just as the two cousins were. I think that hunger probably weakened her, as it does to all of us. You know, we'll do anything for food. It's survival. That's what we need. The only problem with Aisha, she found herself with two bullet holes in the face. But these cousins, that's what they did. You know, they were luring the weak to feed on them and steal everything they own, even if it was just for a few coins and a keychain. I mean, these people that would do that are true monsters. And this is the story of those monsters, Caroline Peoples and Angel Ford Wright. They've been known to be called the Cousin Murderers, the Southside Slayers, whatever you choose to call them. Now, I know this kind of seems like a shorter episode of this. There wasn't a lot of information provided for Caroline or Angel. The reason I chose this one is that it really sat with me for some reason that people can go out and take someone's life for a couple bucks, for a couple coins. I just think human life is worth a little bit more than that, and that's why I chose these two murdering cousins. They're horrible people. They are locked away for life, so we don't have to worry about them anymore, but I promise you there are more people out there in the world like that, just waiting to take advantage of somebody. Especially in the first case with Jose Marquez, a disabled man, promising him sexual favors and then just blowing him away and stealing everything he owned. Why? It's something that baffles me, and it's something that we will be thinking about until the end of time. Why do people kill? But I do want to thank you all for listening. You can always support this podcast if you're so inclined. There's always a link that's provided in the episode notes. And if not, if you don't want to support the podcast, that is quite all right. But please continue to listen to these episodes entirely for free every week. There will also be a link in these notes I'll leave for you that will take you to the Amazon site to purchase my screenplay, Loon Lake. I mean, who wouldn't want a horror screenplay about murder, kidnapping, and human trafficking for Christmas, right? Anyway, again, like I say, I hope you have a beautiful holiday, whatever it is that you celebrate and what you're going to be celebrating this year. I'm sorry that I had to fill your heads with all this blood before you go out and start celebrating your joy, love, and peace. But hey, you asked for it, didn't you? We will be taking this next week off to enjoy the company of our loved ones as well. And I hope you all get to spend as much time as you can with your loved ones. You never know when it might be the last time. I want you all to be safe, have a grand time, and meet me back here soon for another tale of murder and mayhem from all of those lovely women out there. Again, this has been Lady Killers for this week. I am your host, Abraham Archambault. I hope you have sweet dreams.